Hello and welcome to True Romance. This is Carolina Barlow.
And this right here, Devin Leary.
We had quite a week of finales. Everyone who watches TV may know that The White Lotus, the show of the summer, gave us its finale. Spoilers, you know, fast forward a few minutes. But the ending to a lot of people was completely unsatisfying. I disagree for a few reasons. A, I think the problems with the ending, i.e. that Belinda's character didn't get a thorough enough background or arc.
Wait, sorry, was your problem with the fact that her last line of the entire show is just reacting to a white woman and saying one sentence?
Yes, that and her emotional scene where we got to see Alexandra Daddario cry for maybe five close-ups. We gave Belinda like 30 seconds. And for an ending that we all knew was coming, which was that our beloved Jennifer Coolidge was going to betray her, it felt so slight.
I mean,
she just didn't give a storyline. She didn't get a storyline. And Devin and I have been talking about this a lot. And you said basically that it's because a white man wrote this script. And the most nuanced characters were white men. They just ended up being.
Yeah, I just feel like there were points where I felt like the female characters were completely underdeveloped and just existed in relation to the male characters. But then I felt like they did kind of like flesh out some. I do think Rachel's character ended up being slightly more interesting than I expected, but the other female characters were so one-dimensional to me, aside from Jennifer Coolidge, of course, Stan, but pretty much singular non-white person in the whole show, or I guess one of three non-white people in the whole show, but the only black woman, had just, to me, only lines in relation to white people. And like, I think Natasha Rothwell, I think that's her name, right?
Natasha, yeah.
She acted the shit out of it anyway, and like, she did such a good job with what she was given, but she just wasn't given shit. She just wasn't. And it's like, I did find myself loving the story of the teen boy and loving the story of Steve Zahn and loving the story of Armand. But yeah, because those were written by white men, so their characters made sense. I don't get the teen girls.
Okay, I started to get them towards the end.
I didn't get them at all, because this is my issue. Why did Paula go from being a complete and total bitch, spoiled girl with her friend? Like, every single scene, she's just being like, ew, no, like, no, your brother can't sleep with us. Ew, let's do drugs. Who cares? Blah, blah, blah. To suddenly being like, I am a warrior for social justice on this island, and I can't be around spoiled rich people. It's like, how did that character shift happen? It was like overnight. Like, when she had the conversation with Kai and he said, like, do you want to move here? And she said, I'm not going to move here. I actually felt like that made sense for her character, because it's like, oh yeah, she's like, no, I'm better than you. I'm not going to like move to this island. But then when she was like, but I have another idea, I was like, wait, what's happening here?
And okay, then she's like, I have answers for this, I think.
Okay, go ahead. But I'm probably going to disagree.
Subtext is that Olivia's been always hooking up with Paula's boyfriends. And so she basically, when she finds out that Olivia's been hitting on Kai, when he says, like, your friend was like batting my eyelashes, she basically said, like, she loves me as long as she has more than me.
Right.
And which I thought was like a brilliant line, obviously. That's the moment when she decides, like, I'm on another side. Like, this person is yet again trying to take something from me.
That still doesn't...
It doesn't give the full impetus, but it does give revenge. She does have revenge, and it's not... But listen, she does...
Not talking about the revenge thing, though. I think it makes sense for her to get revenge. I don't think it makes sense for her to suddenly be like, oh, I'm tokenized. I am, like, all I care about is, like, the social justice of this, like, friendship now. Like, it's like she suddenly had this entirely woke perspective about her friendship that didn't make sense to me. Like, I totally get if she's like, okay, now I'm gonna get revenge on my friend because she's a bitch and she always hooks up. Like, this, the way the character was presented, it would have made sense to me if her thought line was like, oh my God, my friend's such a bitch. Like, she's like spoiled white girl. And like, I am going to get revenge on her. Not like I am crying because of the injustice. Like, she wasn't even just like, oh my God, I'm so sad. My boyfriend, I can't believe this happened to my boyfriend. She was like lecturing her friend about privilege. And I was like, oh, how did you get this perspective so quickly? Like, you seemed like a really vapid, and it's all in the writing. It was like, she was written as this really vapid, one-dimensional, spoiled Gen Z girl. And then she became like a really woke, like really aware, really intense person. I just didn't think that made sense. But I feel like that was part of the problem with the way the female characters were written, was that it was just like, okay, go from this one dimension to the next one dimension. That being said, I feel like the actress who played Paula was stunning and such a brilliant actress. Again, all the acting was so good. It's just like, to me, it like they had to act in spite of what they were given.
You know me. You know that I initially didn't like the show because of how the teen girls were portrayed and written. I just thought it was so awful, so one-dimensional, and it was kind of like a boomer's idea of what Gen Z is like. And now I do think some of that stuff still applies. Like, I'm confounded when anyone speaks to their parents that way, and I usually only see it on TV and movies. Like, ew, mom, gross. Or like, what? Like, I generally don't see that in real life. But I think that there's a really interesting dynamic that he was playing with, which was, you think you belong with a family, but you don't. And what she says at the end to what Paula, the friend, says at the end to the daughter, Olivia, like, this is your tribe. You are one of these people. And at the dinner a few episodes ago, when Steve Zahn's character is sort of saying all this really offensive shit, like, wait, what am I supposed to do? I'm a white man that has privilege. What, I'm supposed to give it all away? You guys want to give all your money away?
Right.
And that's when I sort of started seeing Paula's character really lean in and like listen a little bit to what was going on around her, because I think that we've all had those moments where we suddenly realize that we are not as valued in a group as we thought. And I think that she just started identifying with Kai more because she knew that she didn't belong with this family, which she initially did think she belonged with because she was a friend on their family trip.
She was a friend on their family trip and was literally bossing the parents around and like being straight up rude to them. Like, I don't know. It's just, it wasn't like she was like a normal girl and she got there and had this experience. She was blatantly rude. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she was like a spoiled rude girl.
All of the characters are terrible. All of the characters are terrible. Jennifer Coolidge doesn't even get a pass. Like, she literally says at the end that she manipulates people with her money. And that was also a thing I thought that was so interesting. It was like, we constantly with therapy think that by naming our crimes, it makes them all better, yeah, but it just makes them that much more egregious. And I just have a really important question, which is, you have to pick one person to kill, one person to fuck, and one person to marry on the White Lotus property.
On the White Lotus? Okay, I'm definitely 1,000,000% fucking the guy that Armand fucks.
Oh my God, Lucas Gage forever.
Lucas Gage's character.
Lucas Gage forever.
I forget his character's name.
It doesn't even matter. His character's name is Dylan, but it really doesn't matter.
Okay, I'm marrying Jennifer Coolidge.
Smart.
Constant entertainment.
Yeah.
Like, she's a bad person, but I'm constantly entertained. As we discussed on the Casey episode, it would be like being married to Sonia. It's like, do I even have to watch The Housewives now? There's one just sitting here and I can just watch her. And then kill. The obvious answer,
of course, is Shane.
Shane. I was going to say Jake because that's the actor's name, but Shane. The obvious answer is Shane, but I'm like trying to think of someone more interesting that would be fun to kill. But Shane is really Shane. It's just, unfortunately, sadly for me and my family, I have dated a Shane. So it just, as Caroline and I were just discussing before we got on here, like that, the way that relationship was portrayed was like just simply visceral. Unfortunately, again, for me, the Shanes that I dated were not like billionaires that I was like wealthy with or something. They weren't even like,
you might date them for a little bit longer, huh?
They weren't even offering to make me a trophy wife, but they just like were terrible as a personality. but we were just talking about how that relationship was so relatable where she like just fucking hated him. Also, I loved the line where she described why they got together, where she was like, I just went through a really bad breakup. I was in a really weird place and like you were attractive and you like took me on really good dates and then you asked me to marry you. Like I was like, I can 1,000% see myself doing that and then being there and being like, fuck.
Well, I like what she said too, where she said, Of course I've always imagined my wedding. Of course I've had this like princess dream. I think most girls have, but the line that killed me was when she said, I don't want to be a plus one for the rest of my life. I don't want to be an appendage. I remember feeling that way when I was a date to some event. And
okay, you would, yes, you dated an event.
I dated an F1 racer. I was on it. I was a date. And I remember thinking, nobody really wants to talk to me. In fact, I'm the person they talk to when they're done talking to my date. And that felt so random. I also, my back really hurt. So I escaped from this after party and just went and sat down and just took deep breaths because I was so tired of
talking.
Yeah. And being a date, being a professional date, like being like, hi, so good to see you. So nice to see you. I mean,
that's how you talk on dates.
Yeah. It's so nice to see you. I would kill Sydney Sweeney's character just because of her voice. I actually really did feel for her. And one of my favorite scenes, I'm not kidding, in the whole show is when she's crying and you realize that she's in love with her friend Paula and Connie Britton hugs her.
What? You think she's in love with her?
1,000%.
Okay, yes, that's giving way too much interesting credit to the character. I did not get that at all.
I really believe that she's in love with... I believed it from day one, and I'm actually going to get on a Reddit thread because I don't want to feel alone and pervy in this belief. But yeah, okay. I would kill Sydney Sweeney's character. I would probably... I mean, it's hard. Like, I would fuck, marry, whatever he wants to do to me. I would eat Lucas Gage's ass.
1,000.
And
1,000.
1,000. I think I would marry Quinn, the kid who wants to live in Hawaii and runs away.
Oh my God. Okay, first of all, you're a pedophile, but second of all, that's really cute that you're marrying a kid.
He's 21. Listen, we're unconventional, but it's certainly not against the law.
He is a really interesting guy. I guess I could also I also could marry one of the boat paddlers that is on his boat, although that person might think that I'm really lazy, because as I was watching them do that, I was like, really, you're not going to go back with your family? Like, that is not for me.
The guys on the boat turn around. Devin and I have SPF 65 on.
Another thing that I liked that I forgot to mention about Rachel's like speech about getting married, which also, she's a brilliant actress and I underestimated her because the character was so flat in the beginning, but she's
so
really
hot
good.
That it's hard when hot girls are talented. Are also talented. You're like, it's always been a struggle for me.
You've never gotten shit on your own. Oh, wait. But when she said, like, everyone kept telling me how lucky I was, like, loved that. And it reminded me of Bethany Frankel and Bethany Ever After when she says, like, everyone tells her, like, Jason's such an amazing guy. Like, she's so lucky. He's perfect. She's so lucky. And I have been in relationships like that where people are like, you're so lucky. Oh my God, you're with him. And I'm like, okay, yeah, Brad Pitt is great. But like, since Moneyball, has he done anything good? Like, how lucky am I? It's like, I don't know. Just kidding. I'm not married to Brad Pitt, you guys.
You guys. What? You almost got me with that one. I honestly think girls just do this when other girls are in relationships. They'll be like, how long have you guys been together? Oh my God, how'd you guys meet? This is me, by the way. I'm mimicking myself and I'm not even kidding. I'll be like, how did you guys meet? Oh, that's so great. And because I'm just jealous of anyone who's in a happy relationship, but most people are in like happy relationships at best. We're just always, and this brings me back to Rachel's character, because she says, she basically says, I was with you because I didn't want to be alone. And
yeah.
Shane tells her, then be alone, and walks right away. And like, no one really is there for her. And so she decides to go back to him at the end, which is a haunting ending because you know she can't stand him.
Yeah.
And he's just somewhere to be, kind of. And I mean, one of the hardest scenes in the whole show for me to watch was when he's spooning her in bed and she looks like she's having like a panic attack.
Yeah.
And it's that feeling where once you know that you cannot be with someone, you just can't unknow it. And once mm-hmm. you're with them, after knowing that, you all you can think about is getting away.
Yeah.
Even if you know it'll be hard, even if you know you're like whenever you start feeling that way about a relationship, it's time to go. And I think that I'm like, this is really profound. When you think you hate your boyfriend, I think it's time to leave, ladies. That's
it.
A red
literally
flag.
Is profound. Like, no, I have been with people I've hated before and just like lived with it and been like, still like, I just went to a psychic because like I'm not sure what I should do. But also, Shane, Jake Lacy, the actor, did such a good job of acting like the white guy
breakup
response, because I have had that response so many times in breakups where it's like, wait, what are you talking about? Like, you are, what is wrong with you? And it's to me, I feel like it's like the way that white male privilege manifests in breakups is that they're like, wait, something's going not the way I want it to. What is wrong with you that you're making that happen? Like, that shouldn't happen. Are you crazy? Like, let's rewind. Let's pretend that's not happening. Like, that's the thing too, is that I feel like his arc was like, okay, she's crazy and she's losing her mind that she made this decision. So then he's just like living with that. Like, he's like, okay, I think she has lost her mind that she would ever think that she shouldn't be with me of all people. And then when she changes her mind, he's just like, oh, so you were just being crazy for a few days and now you're back to being sane. So everything's fine. Like, that's the response that I can never understand. Cause I'm just like, I feel like if someone said they didn't want to be with me, since I'm constantly tearing myself apart on the inside anyways, being like, this is what's wrong with me, I'm so insecure at this, I feel like I would be like, oh, I did something wrong. Not like, oh, so you're losing your mind, take a few days and then change your mind, and that's the only outcome I'll accept. Like,
right. That was another detail that I thought, oh my God, this is such the worst breakup, is when he comes back into the room
and acts like nothing happened. Yeah.
Yes. And she's just sitting on the bed, and it's that feeling, oh, where you're like, wait, no, you really have to leave though.
Yeah.
Oy vey. What I loved most about the show is that no character came away pristine. Everyone had their faults. And that was another reason why I think Belinda was totally underdeveloped, was because she was pristine.
Yeah.
And that isn't as much fun as getting to be a fully rounded human being. And that's what the message of the show was. And, you know, my 21-year-old boyfriend...
Husband,
sorry,
it's husband. You're not even used to it yet. Like, you don't even know how to say it.
21-year-old husband, yes. he said at one point in the show, he's like, none of us are innocent. We're all guilty at this point on the planet.
Yeah.
We're all polluters of the earth, which is just like the note that I wanted to leave with you guys today.
Well, that's the note from which we want to leave the White Lotus Island as we move on to another island, and that is
F-Boy Island.
So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with a deep dive into the F-Boy.
I want true romance.
And we're back with True Romance. Today is one of my newly favorite topics, which is the television show, as Devin put it, the revolution that is F-Boy Island.
It's really revolutionary. It's really radical. I am still going to watch Bachelor in Paradise, which is premiering tonight, but I keep thinking how much better this is than Bachelor in Paradise.
I feel like the Bachelor producers must be shaking in their boots because it's so much better. Nothing beats Nikki Glaser. I really think did such a good job because she took it seriously. She actually found meaning behind it, and you can tell she's pulling so many strings just based on how it's perfectly tailored. Now, if for those of you who haven't been watching, it's a show based on the idea that women are choosing between F-boys and nice guys. And on an island, there's three girls choosing between 24 guys, half of whom are nice guys, half of whom are F-boys. If the F-boys win, they win $100,000. If the nice guys win, they get the girl. And so the girls are constantly trying to see if a guy's just there for money or if the guy really likes them. That being said, all of the rules, again, a brilliant move in reality TV, is someone at HBO Max or Nikki Glaser saying, what if there are no rules, and we change them whenever we want. So all of a sudden, she makes the guys give up their statuses in the middle of the friggin' series.
One thing that was shocking to me, I think, in episode 4 was that when Sarah was like, well, we actually like don't even know how the money part of the show works. And I was sitting there like, I was like, I don't think I really understand how the money part works. And I thought that was just me. Then I find out none of the cast even knows. She's like, we don't even know like who's going to get the money or like how it works. And I was like, why do you guys not know this? Like, this is weird. That surprise was second only to the surprise that Fernando, one of the main guys Love who's Fernando. Left in the end, is on the Olympic bobsled team. He's like, yeah, I'm like not that worried about this because I'm also an Olympic bobsledder for the U.S. Olympic bobsled team. I was like,
are you on the wrong show?
These other fucking guys, their titles are like, I'm a content designer. I'm a styler of TikTok blings. Like, that's their title. And he is an Olympic bobsledder and also a doctor, chiropractor. Like, how?
I think that this show is brilliant because these women are being told the truth literally to their faces and they are not hearing it. And yeah. I'm not saying that to make women sound dumb at all. Obviously, like we talk about this on the pod all the time. I'm saying that we build the narrative we want to have, and also that peace, like P-E-A-C-E, peace in a relationship looks boring to the average viewer. And it feels boring sometimes to the average person in the relationship. I mean, we do have to give these girls, like, give them a break because they're also in their early 20s when you make these mistakes. But
yeah,
it was really crazy. Like, you know, Garrett, who's the worst one on the show, I almost proudly is. He is, you know, dating Sarah, who looks like she's a flyer for, like, the Lakers. And she knows that he was in a relationship. She knows that he told all the guys that he would never date any of these girls in person. He like, and every time she's like, I'm really pissed off. I'm like, done.
Yes.
And then she talks to him and she's like, I actually like, for a second, I like kind of saw what Garrett was going through. And, you know, I actually like, I feel like we're back on track. He literally, it could have been like, well, Garrett took a shit on my chest, but I honestly, like, after second thought, after talking to him about it, I feel like, at least he's admitting the truth. And then again, Sarah delivers what I think is really profound insight, where she's talking to Josh, the guy that she should have ended and should have ended up with. And she said, I had an epiphany. The difference between the nice guys and the F boys is just accountability. The nice guys are just like, yeah, I did do that. Or yeah, I did say that. And the F guys have no accountability. And she said, like, they draw circles around me. And I was thinking, like, yeah, that's the feeling when, like, you're just like, wait, what did you say? Wait, so are right. you into me or not? Okay, so wait, do you like me? What do you know about me? And all of these things.
Well, I was thinking about how in this documentary I watched on Netflix about a woman who lied and said that she escaped the Holocaust and was raised by wolves. Okay. Just like a casual afternoon watch. But this genealogist in the documentary said, to believe is human. Oh, okay. Which I was like, okay, I love that so much, because within the context of that, it was like, well, how did we believe a story that was so ludicrous? But we, as humans, we want to believe. And that's how I felt in relationships. Like, I look back and I know that is what Sarah is doing and what all of the women in different relationships within the show have done, where they're like, wait, why did I believe that? Like, I can't believe I was so stupid. And it's like, no, you're not stupid. You're human. You want to see the best in people. You want to believe that what someone's telling you is true because you want to believe in love and good things and all that stuff.
That's true.
And, but yeah, it really is baffling. Also, Garrett, I realized by the end of the show, I was like, oh, so he thinks he's like Spencer Pratt. Like, that's what he wants to be. But Spencer Pratt is actually an intelligent and interesting human being, like as evil as a villain.
Wait, do you really think he is?
Yeah. Hell yeah. Tess Sitzman is the one who educated me on this. It's like, Spencer, first of all, made a decision to be a villain of the show for his career. Like,
that's
he was like, I'm going to be the villain of the show. And not only was he the villain, but he made it like a complicated, interesting villain where he started buying fucking crystals and married Heidi and was like doing purposely doing weird shit on Snapchat. Like, he knew what he was doing and he was interesting. And now he like lives in Santa Barbara, and him and Heidi are I'm just saying, like, he's like a layered, interesting person. Whereas Garrett is like dumb as rock. So it's like he wants to be a villain, but he doesn't even have interesting villain things to say.
He's not charismatic. No, he's just like, I was so sick of him.
Yeah, literally. That's what I did. Yeah. And it's like, you're not even fucking saying anything. Same with Casey, where I just was like, I don't see what she sees in him. And I don't see what anyone, like, it's one thing if he was like this weird villain and then we could get to, like, at least watch that. It's like, he just is so lame and boring. But he is an incel. And in episode four, no, Casey. I mean, Garrett's an incel too, but...
Oh my gosh, yeah.
They're actually having, like, a really sweet moment. And she tells him she is starting to really like him. And he's like, I really like you too. And then he pivots from that to, like, but you have to be okay with me being friends with Garrett. Like, that's my boy. By the way, they met, like, 1 month ago. And he's like, that's my friend. And she starts to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, this is a 50-50 relationship. And she's like, it's actually not really. Like, this show was for you to come on here and try to date me. So that's actually not 50-50. And then he says, like, I know you could walk all over all the other guys in here, but you can't walk all over me. And she has, like, the best response where she just, like, immediately stands up is like, nope, I'm good. No, I don't deal with that. I don't deal with that.
She says, you're confused. Which is my favorite thing. And I'm seriously going to keep it in my back pocket for any time I feel this way. Like, oh, you're confused right now.
Yeah. And then just like walking away, leaving the situation. I wish that Sarah would have had that same strength, but
Sarah,
she didn't seem to find it. And Nakia also, I mean, Nakia really seemed to have the most trouble not seeing the F-boyness.
She did. She seemed to be the person who was the most bored with nice guys. And I mean, listen, Fernando is such a great catch. You would have to be high not to see it.
I know.
When they do an amazing segment called Mansplaining, where all the guys basically tell the girls what they know about the guys they're choosing between. OG Jared is getting roasted by these guys. Just like, you know, you said that you had 1500 bitches in your DMs, all this stuff. And then Fernando is just sitting to the side, like whittling his thumbs. He has nothing to say because he's just a really nice guy. He's a doctor and an Olympian. He knows how to give a massage. And I literally...
massage looked so fucking good.
Yeah. And he was so... It was my favorite kind of masculinity where OG Jared kept on being like, yo, like, let me massage her. Like, don't do that. And he was like, no, right now I'm massaging her. Like...
I know, the way he handled that was so attractive. I was like, how is she not just like, let's go off this island right now? Like, I'm walking away with you. He handled that in such a hot way. He handled every situation perfectly, and he had the best attitude. Like, he had such a positive attitude. He always was like smiling and happy. And the mansplaining episode, this is where I was like, this show is revolutionary.
Me
like
too.
This was the moment where I literally was like stuffing popcorn in my face. And I'm like, okay, wait, this is actually a revolution. It's not just a reality show. And that was because we've seen all these shows where it's after the final rose. It's like The Bachelor. And then all the, basically like The Bachelorette comes and sits on a couch and all the men scream at her about all the things she did wrong. Or like vice versa, the man sits there and all the women scream at him. This was a genius thing where, first of all, the whole episode was just about like them having to say all the shit that they know, like talk all the shit, say everything you know about everyone. And I was like, this is a revolution. I'm sitting and watching these Real Housewives reunions where Andy has to like delicately be like, so Sarah from Seattle says she's wondering if your husband had an affair, then why are you talking about Giselle's husband having an affair? And in this scenario, no need for all that bullshit. Just sit in the bleachers, talk shit. Everyone raise your hand separately and talk all the shit you've heard.
And the shit they have is actually golden. Like, I was truly stressed. I was like, please have something good. Please have something good. I really need this in my life right now. Casey called CJ, the girl he's with, when she initially was going to dump him or whatever. When they were in a fight, he called CJ a glorified escort. And then CJ gives one of the best lines of the season and says, oh, if being an escort is bad, then why are you guys fucking us for money?
Truly genius. Wanted to run out in the streets and scream CJ's name and say, like, I'm giving my life to this woman. I was slightly disturbed when I went to her Instagram and her bio said for comedy inquiries message. And I was like, yeah, not quite a comedian, but okay. But we glossed over the fact that in episode 4 into episode 5, because they always do their little cliffhangers, Casey said that he didn't think that CJ deserved to be with any of the men there. He had like a little incel rant and he said he didn't think she deserved to be with any of the men and he walked out. And that, but then he like escaped back from F-Boy Island to rejoin the group, which I was like, oh, did they all know that was an option that they could all just like run back?
Obviously not. They just knew that like CJ was just going to like be with one of the guys, even though the real up and down hot flame was this guy, Casey, who I do believe is 18. He definitely, his true colors
he
were
wears
shown
sweatpants.
That night.
He wears sweatpants with
drawstring pants with a button down
to the ceremony. Like
his
goodbye.
Mom has yet to tell him not to do that. And during the mansplaining, when someone says, you know, you called her a glorified escort, that obviously it just like is one of those things you just can't unsay. Don't get us wrong. It's not that an escort is anything bad. It's that he intended to hurt her and to slander her that way. It was clear from CJ's response that she didn't think it was bad, but she was more angry at like what it implied. And when they go on a date later, it's just like so painful to watch because she's just so over it. And Casey's like, well, I was hurt. And CJ was like, because I called you a boy toy and then you called me a whore. And he's like, oh, you're taking it out of context. You're taking it out of context. Like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I mean, listen, I truly can't think that bad of Casey because I understand the appeal of him more than Garrett, because Casey's whole thing is like, what? Me? I'm innocent. Oh, my God. I'm innocent. Right. And being charming. And I think it's actually really easy to fall for that. Garrett's thing is like Gaston from Beauty and the Beast. Like, I'm like, you are a fucking, like, you are a shitty comic book character of a human being.
And he's so ugly to me.
He's so ugly. Like, I truly can barely look at him. And he is like a Gerber baby blown up, like with steroids. And I can't.
With steroids, exactly.
And as a flat chested person, when poor Sarah is sitting there and one of the guys is like, Sarah, Garrett told us after he went on your one on one that if you guys were going to ever date, he was going to have to buy you fake tits. And again, poor Sarah, like she's just, it's not computing. She's hearing it and she's not hearing it. She's literally going, saying stuff like, that's interesting. Later when she talks to him about it, he's like, no, I didn't say that about you. I said, I did buy a girl fake tits once. And you know, like that, I was fine with that. And she goes, to each their own, I guess. And I was like, Sarah, babe, come on. Like, dig a little deeper.
I was like, call your sorority sisters. Ask them if this is normal, please, because this is not normal. And she always also, like, exactly like you said, like, she'll be like, I'm done. And, like, this is not, like, I would have left. If this was the real world, I would have, like, walked away a long time ago. And it's like, I think it would actually be a little bit harder to walk away in the real world because it's not just, like, all about your relationship, but that's just me.
She also, like, his dates with her, I mean, at least the other guys would, like, fake it when they would be like, so, you know, what is your, like, what's your dreams or what do you see coming out of this, blah, blah, blah. Garrett's dates with Sarah, he was like, what's the freakiest thing you've ever done? And, it, like,
yeah,
what
he,
would
like,
you
tried
like
to
have do?
Sex with her on one of them.
It was so weird. It was also just cued me into the fact that I do believe Garrett's a sex addict. His like confessional when he's talking about being a fuckboy, he's like, I like threesomes, foursomes, fivesomes. I'm like, you need to calm down.
Well, but that kind of sounded to me like, have you ever even had sex? Because he's he's like six sums, seven sums, eight sums, nine
oh,
sums, 10
I fucked
sums.
Like 100 girls in like a locker room once.
Wait, okay, sidebar. The other brilliant, radical, revolutionary thing about this show is Nikki Glaser's like C plot. Like, we're sitting there wondering, why are the guys at this F boy tiki hut and they're at like a nice guy mansion? Like, what's the point of that? The point of that was exclusively just for, I mean, I don't know what the nice guy mansion was for because they never explained it, but the F boy like limbro tiki hut was just for Nikki Glaser to do these side bits where she would do like therapy sessions with the F boys. And it became my favorite part of the show to the point where every time I saw the Limbro sign, I was like, oh, Limbro, Limbro, we're going to Limbro. Because it was so fucking funny. Israel remains the MVP of the show. He is so fucking funny. She's doing a therapy session with him. And he's like, yeah, I used to sleep with girls. They wear all different costumes, cartoon characters even. And then the F-boys are bored, so they decide to make like a fake woman out of sand. They're like, let's make a sand castle, but it's a woman. And I was like, this is actually the best television I've ever seen. They make like a very base level sand castle of a woman with coconut boobs and like sticks for hair. And Israel says, this looks like the first human being they ever discovered. And then when another guy joins the Limbro, like this guy shows up at Limbro and they're like, okay, so that's Lucy, and point to the sandcastle woman. And he goes, that's who?
It's so crazy.
Just so good. And then just another final favorite thing, when Nikki Glaser does a version of the Serenity Prayer with the F-boys, but it's all about being an F-boy. And it's like, to listen when women are talking to me and to always wear a condom. Amen. Stuff like that. That was really funny.
I like when she quizzed them and she said, if you don't want to get a girl pregnant, where's the best place to come? And someone said, on her back.
It's like, they're so sincere. They're like, oh, it's on her back. It's on her back. And she's like, okay. But she's so funny and good. Like, I just thought she was genius in this.
I want true romance.
I really want to get into the top six, but I have to circle back and say something about the Garrett and Casey relationship. A, like, I love romances. I really do. I know that sounds so stupid, but I love, like, you know, the boys on Jersey Shore. Like, I actually do think, like, Polly and Vinny are, like, really funny people, and I love their friendship. What Casey and Garrett are doing, I think is, like, a racist fraternity. Like, they give me that energy.
1,000.
Rather than, like, sweet, like, friends. I don't think they're cute in the slightest. And also, this is what upset me most about the CJ thing, is that we already got the vibe that Garrett was gross. And so when Casey tells CJ, like, listen, I'm going to be friends with who I want to be friends with, this is the thing that pisses me off whenever you have a conversation like this with a guy. It's like, yeah, why do you want to be friends with him? That's the question. Why are you, you're going to fight for this friendship over me? Like, this is already becoming an issue.
Yeah,
I've had this with so many guys. It drives me fucking crazy. It's like, I am not going to prove myself to be more worthier than some friggin' dirtbag on the side of the freeway. I'm not getting into that conversation. The fact that you want to have that conversation freaks me out.
Or that female friend.
Yes, always, always. It's like, listen, I'm actually pretty respectful when it's someone that I'm like, no, I don't want to mess that up. I know that, like, how much you care about them. But when someone is exhibiting shitty behavior, it isn't really a conversation. It's more of like, okay, so I actually am weirded out that you want to be their friend.
Right.
I don't understand it. And I think that was like the point I love when she was like, wait, what? Like, you're confused.
Yeah.
I read an interview with her where she was like, I'm actually not that mean. Like, this show makes me look really, like, hardcore and mean, but I'm actually really nice.
I don't think she comes off hardcore and mean at all. If anything, I thought she was too nice at certain points.
I loved that when CJ was on a date with new Jared and Casey, her top two, and they're making pizza, and her and Casey are, like, flirting. And new Jared's like, wait, what's the last thing that he said to you on the night of the elimination? And she's like, you said that I didn't deserve any of the guys here.
She does do baby talk, yeah.
And I was like, I identify with, like, wait, shit, we should probably talk about that, huh?
Well, I have to say that I love new Jared, and he came out of nowhere because as people may recall, if you listen to the pod on the initial F-Boy Island episode, I said I don't like new Jared because I thought he was rude and came on too strong. But he really surprised me. He's totally, completely comfortable and himself and calm. Like, I really felt like he was like, yeah, she could be with me or not. I don't know. You know, like, he just was like, I'm me. I'm doing the best I can. And I felt like he had a great energy. He really loved her personality and, like, her independence. So I just feel like he came out of the woodwork and was, like, one of the best guys there, which I had no idea.
Me too. I definitely thought he was too suave for me. Initially, but he kept on telling her that she was so powerful, that she was a leader, and da da da. And I just, like, wasn't attracted to him until the day after they hooked up, when she was like, I actually think you're, like, more of a bad guy than I realized, which is, like, obviously hot.
Yeah.
And then to the camera, he said, she just had to see that I had some dog in me.
I know.
And I was like, oh, okay.
I have to say, like, in the mansplaining episode, just to bring it back for a second, that was when Greg, who was eliminated, and he did say, like, he was more of a friend with Nakia than he was, like, a romantic connection, but he was so funny in the mansplain. Like, he was commenting, he was the one who was commenting on every single thing, and he would be like, talk that talk, and stuff like that. And he was getting so excited and, like, laughing out loud that it made me like him so much better. Especially when that one guy said, so basically he had a thing about Fernando where he was like, Nando said that if I come to LA, he'll hook me up with a bunch of girls, which I was like, so? And the guy who was ratting on Fernando was like, so basically he a hoe. And then Greg starts like laughing so hard. That was one of my favorite moments.
That brings me to OG Jarrett, who is one of the more mysterious choices I've ever seen, like, a contestant of any dating show make.
Disgusting.
So problematic. A, like, he just would get frequently very upset with her. Like, they had problems from the beginning. And this is another thing that I think is a signifier to that, like, girls love being in a narrative that, like, we've had our ups and downs and yes, we made it through. Like, that's a romantic story, because both Sarah and Nakia, like, loved that about the guys yeah, they were with. Like, but OG Jarrett, first of all, the Jarrett's fashion is just truly, like, it's sort of like when I was 13 and I really wanted to be in the pages of Teen Vogue. So I would try to do stuff like wear, I don't know, tie-dye tights to school and, you know, maybe wear some fishnet stockings on my wrists.
Oh my God, Avril move.
Yeah, obviously Avril was of the zeitgeist. But what I'm saying is I do believe that, like, OG Jarrett might be influenced by Avril. He definitely seems to have been dog-earing some pages of Vogue.
I mean, Vogue is so generous. Like, I feel like the Delia's catalog.
Wet Seal.
The Wet Seal catalog.
The fact is that he really believes that if he says something over and over again, it will make it true. Like, he just keeps on saying the most basic shit that, for whatever reason, Nakia is buying, even though I honestly think that Colin is a better liar. I am, like, and Colin admits, like, oh, she shouldn't have picked me. I was definitely going to take the money. But
he was just cooler and more interesting as a person. Cooler
and more interesting. And OG Jarrett literally wouldn't dance. Like, they're all dancing and he would
not
dance.
And he's just laying there. He's such a POS.
He's so rude.
He's like your rude boyfriend who's, yes, like, at the party, like, yes, making everyone feel bad because he's having a bad time. But also, can I just say that, as someone who owned jeggings, I don't think I would ever wear them on a national streaming service. I also realized that the men didn't have that many outfits, which is classic, because women would have been like, okay, I'm bringing 17 suitcases and HBO has to pay for my overpacking charges because that's just what I need. These men only had like one rose ceremony outfit. So like Casey was wearing the drawstring pants every time. And OG Jarrett was wearing variations of this suit. Like, he would wear the pants with like a different shirt or the suit jacket with like a different. And I was like, take it out of the rotation. He couldn't even walk in the pants. They were so tight.
They were also so tight.
His voice is truly nails on a chalkboard to me. Like, he sounds like a whining, complaining 13-year-old yes, at Hot Topic. And he's like, literally, and I can't, no, like, literally, I don't want to do this right now because it's like, I do like you, and like, I'm better than these other guys, literally. And I know, as Devin Hunter Leary, say literally every other word, but I'm actively going to make an effort to stop using that word because of the way Casey fucking Garrett and OG Jarrett showed me what that word really sounds like. I will make a vow starting maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, where I try not to say that anymore.
This is something I realized with the F boys, and Garrett and OG are, you know, Casey was a little bit more suave. Garrett yeah, and OG sounded like a kid who was trying to convince their mom that they had learned their lesson about telling her to go fuck herself.
Right.
And so therefore they should be allowed to go to hockey camp with Skylar and the guys that weekend. Right. They were like, okay, what I've been trying to tell you, mom, is that I like you, okay? And I don't understand. Like, at one point, OG Jarrett goes, oh, Nikki and I are supposed to be together. It's destined by, like, the universe.
Oh,
and
my
I was
God.
Like, okay, you could have, you know, maybe thought about it a little bit more. And Garrett is like, listen, once you see this soft part of me, like, that is me. Like, I am, like, tough, but, like, once you... And I was like, Garrett, you are actually full of shit, and you are... Like, when the word soft, like, you are the softest guy ever. And watching him and Casey talk to each other, Casey's like, dude, like, I'm gonna sound like a pussy, but, like, really like her.
I know. And then in the mansplain, Garrett said some guy was like, you have committed, like, the worst crimes in humanity, which is what they said about him in the mansplain, basically. And he's like, that's fine, dude. I would have a crush on me, too. That's fine if you have a crush on me. I was like, this is not 2002. Please open your eyes. Also, Caroline and I watched a bunch of the episodes together, and we kept saying, like, every time it would show Garrett, we were like, he's the worst human being alive. He's the worst human being alive.
Garbage.
He is so garbage. And
well, that's the thing that I really believed. I was like, wait, Sarah actually does really like this guy, because if it were me, I would be like, I don't actually want to be associated with this person on camera. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, some of the fuckboys I'm actually very attracted to. I have admitted that Colin, I would break my nose ring rule for.
Yes.
And Casey, like, honestly, I would probably have had sex with him in high school, and then
definitely
hit him up again. And if he didn't respond, I would hit him up one more time.
Yep.
And then maybe like a year later would hit him up again.
And
so,
maybe do like the classic, like, send him a text and pretend that you meant to send it to someone else. Like,
oh,
hey,
oh,
I can't
God.
Find my film 101 textbook. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I thought I meant to send this to someone else. LMAO, but LMAO. Anyway, what are you up to? How are you? See how it lands. All I'm saying, see how it lands.
Yeah, I definitely would have tried that. So I understand that. Garrett, on the other hand, like, listen, we're going to have to wrap this up because we have another episode. I want to leave you on that note.
Leave it on the fact that Garrett is the worst living person with active facial rosacea on this planet. And he is a Gerber baby on steroids. And he's not even good enough to go down in reality show villain history because he's just like trash, boring, garbage, stupid. No.
He's Trump's America.
He is what Trump's America thinks is a reality show villain. And
he's the third Trump son. I'm sorry, the fourth. Oh, my God.
No, there's
Justice
only two.
For Baron.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's Baron's SAT tutor who's sleeping with Melania.
Yes.
1,000%.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much for tuning in.
Okay, we'll talk to you next week, and we'll give you some more insights on F-Boy Island, because we can't leave the island. We really can't.
We can't leave the island, and we really have to talk about the finale. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Love you, Devin.
Love you, Carol.